Hello and welcome to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm your host, Belinda Walia, and today's conversation is one many parents and future parents will deeply relate to. Today I'm joined once again by the wonderful Bharathi Dhir, author of Worth, Qualified Social Worker, and someone who brings both professional insight and personal experience into the world of parenting and identity. Bharathi is not only an adoptive mother, she also works closely with children and families in child protection. She understands firsthand how parenting styles, early experiences, culture, and identity all shape how children grow and how we, as parents, are constantly learning alongside them. In a time where many parents feel stretched between work, expectations, social pressure, and their own unresolved stories, today's conversation explores how we raise children with awareness, how our upbringing influences our parenting style, and how we create space for identity, belonging, and connection at home. Bharathi, it's such a pleasure to welcome you back.
Thank you so much, Belinda, and it's an honor to be invited back. And I'm really looking forward to our discussion today. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, Bharathi, you bring both personal and professional experience to parenting. How has your own identity journey influenced the way you show up as a mother?
That's a really interesting question. So, in terms of my identity, it's a bit complex because I was found on a roadside in Uganda, and it was only after a few weeks that it was discovered that my racial identity is half African and half Asian. And I was subsequently adopted into an Asian Sikh family, Punjabi Sikh family. So I had to navigate the whole issue of identity from a very early age, you know, and identity has so many components to it. It's not just your upbringing, but it's how you perceive yourself in terms of race, in terms of religion, in terms of sexuality, in terms of sexism, you know, your gender.
Yes.
And also your disability, if you have a disability or a condition. So identity forms so much of those components, and much more the community that you're in. You know, they very much form your identity as well, your sense of identity. So yes. In terms of my identity and what it brings to my parenting, I have to say that I really struggled a lot in the beginning, accepting who I was, because my sense of identity was very much formed by the perceptions of people around me, not necessarily my family, but from the community that I lived in. So I was very aware that being half African and being half Asian was not really accepted in the 60s, you know, and it wasn't accepted within the Asian community, and certainly adoption wasn't. So what that has done to my parenting journey is that I've actually adopted, as you said, I've adopted a child myself, and I had to bring all that compassion, bring all that understanding and patience when my own child was having issues with her identity and who she was and why did certain things happen to her. So I think I was able to bring that experience into my parenting to help my child understand and accept who she was.
That's incredibly moving. I really believe those experiences changes the way we parent. When you've walked through identity struggles yourself, you don't dismiss those questions in your child. You meet them with empathy. And in my opinion, that kind of patience and compassion can shape the child's confidence for life. So I really appreciate you sharing that personal aspect. And parenting styles can vary so much, from authoritative to permissive to very structured. How conscious are you of the style you're practicing, and how has that evolved over time?
Well, I'll be very honest. I've had to do a lot of reflection about this, and I'm not proud to say that. I think when my child was younger, I was very authoritative as a parent and very structured. And I think it was because I thought that by being disciplined, bringing structure, being authoritative, not really listening to my child, was making me a better parent because I was the one who was in charge. And I think when my child sort of became a teenager and there were some issues that arose, and I suddenly had to take a step back, and I came to a realization that either I carried on the way I was and I would lose my child emotionally and potentially physically, because she was distancing herself from me, and I was afraid that she would actually leave, you know, at a certain age. Or I had to look at myself, and I had to dig deep, and I had to look and see myself as a parent and see what I was doing, the damage I was doing to my child. So I had to do a lot of reflection. And the reflection I came to was that I needed to be permissive. It wasn't the authoritative part that gets you respect. It's about you learning to trust that your child is able to make right choices. And even if she makes wrong choices, you're just there to guide her. You're just there to help her. You're there to advise her. But you're not there to impose your will on her. And do you know what, Belinda? Because I came from a parenting style. My Indian parents were very authoritative. It was do as I say, you know, philosophy. And I brought that into my parenting. It was do as I say, do as my religion says, do as my values say, do as, you know, do everything as I say it should be. And it doesn't work. It didn't work for my child. It didn't make her respectful of me. It made her more fearful of failure. It made her fearful of letting me down. It made her angry because she wasn't given a choice. It was very much, everything was very much on my terms. So I really had to dig deep, and I'll be honest, it was a very painful lesson to realize that my style was not working with me and my child, and I needed to be a bit more permissive by letting go and letting her make the choices and not judging her for those choices, being there to hold her up if anything went wrong. But it wasn't, you know, I often say to my friends that it wasn't my life journey. She has her own life journey. I had my own life journey, and I still got my own life journey. But we as parents have to accept that our children have wills of their own. They have a life journey that they have to travel. We're just there to guide them and advise them along the way. We're not there to crack that emotional whip and say, you will do as I say, because that does not develop a loving relationship. It's more of a, I am your head and you are actually, you have no say, and that doesn't evoke any respect or true love.
Thank you for being that honest. I mean, that takes real courage to admit, especially as a parent. And I know there's a lot of parents out there listening that will be able to resonate with what you're saying. They understand it, but to put it into practice is quite a challenge for a lot of people. And there's a lot of parent guardians out there that feel they have to live what they lacked through their child as well. And in my opinion, so many of us, and people that are parents, I mean, I'm not a mother myself, but I do like to consider that I have those motherly instincts when it comes to my nieces and nephews, but or any child really. So many of us, from what we were shown, not necessarily from what works, practice that, don't we? What from it's learned behavior, what we feel we were brought up with, we put that into practice, believing, well, I'm okay, so it must, if it worked for me, it worked for my child. And sometimes we only realize the impact when there's distance and when something starts to fracture. And what I really respect is that you didn't stay stuck in that. I think that's wonderful that you were able to reflect, you adjusted, you chose connection over control, and you're very conscious of the way you're parenting. And that shift from authority to trust, that's not weakness at all. That's 100% growth. And that's very valuable advice. So thank you so much for sharing that. So Bharti, many parents worry about getting it right. From what you've seen, what matters more, perfection or consistency?
I think what matters most is consistency. And, you know, none of us are perfect. We've all got flaws. As parents, we've got flaws. None of us can be perfect parents. And I think just learning to accept that and accept that you're not always going to get it right, you know. And, you know, you can also be inconsistent at times. But when you're inconsistent, actually being able to step back and actually acknowledge it to your child is so important, you know. But don't strive for perfection. Don't strive for perfection in your child. Don't strive for perfection as a parent, because we are human beings. We are fundamentally flawed. We're not going to get that perfection. We may think we are perfect, but actually there's a lot we can learn from our children, and there's a lot that they can learn from us. And it's okay to be able to say, I was wrong today when I did that, or I said this. It's okay. It helps a child understand that, you know, it's okay sometimes to be lacking or to fail, but just pick yourself up and carry on. That's the key message that a child gets, a mum or, you know, dad or whoever your parent is, whoever your carer is. You know, we have to acknowledge there are many different types of families. Children are brought up by grandparents, they're brought up by aunts and uncles, they're brought up by friends, they're brought up by foster carers, they're brought up by, you know, parents as well, single parents, single sex parents. So we have to accept that there is, you know, that a child, whatever style of parenting, whoever you are, the most important message to the child is nobody's perfect.
I love what you're saying, because what I've come across is people saying to me that, if I let them get away with that, they're not going to learn from that mistake, and I'm not going to have that discipline. And I think they're failing to realize the difference between discipline, consistency, and perfection. And what you're saying, I completely agree with. Consistency matters far more than perfection. And in my view, when a parent can say, I got that wrong, which from my experience, a lot of parents of my parents' generation wouldn't ever say that.
Yes, it's true, it's true.
It actually, but if they can say it, it actually builds more respect, not less. And it teaches accountability, resilience, and emotional safety. And you're right, families come in many forms, but that what children really need is honesty, steadiness, and that constant reassurance that mistakes don't mean love disappears. And I think that's what people fear, isn't it? That's such an important
It's so true. And also, you know, like, I have to just share this, Belinda. One day, an aunt came to my house, and my daughter got up and she was helping, clear the table after we'd eaten. And I said to her, "Oh, thank you for doing that." And it wasn't because she'd never done it. She's done it several times. But I always feel that I should thank, because it's important to acknowledge that, your child has done something. And, my aunt said, "Why are you thanking her?" And I said, "Because she's doing something kind, and, she doesn't have to, and that's why I'm thanking her." And she went, "Never, ever thank your child or say sorry to your child." And do you know what? And I said, "Why?" And she said, "You know what you said, if you start, you're bowing down to your child by thanking them or saying sorry to them, and you are the authority figure." And I said, "I don't agree with you." And I left it like that. But, this conversation we're having about authoritative and permissive, at what point do you decide that you're never going to say sorry or thank you to your child for anything that they do or anything you've done? Why? If you're in a partnership and your partner gets up and does something like wash up, you might just turn and say, "Oh, thanks." Or they make you a cup of tea, you say, "Thanks." It's just a natural thing. Why would it be any less for a child?
Yes, no, you're absolutely right. Because I think it's important to value behavior as well. That is kind. And that's such a powerful example. So thank you for sharing that. And I honestly think saying thank you or sorry to a child doesn't weaken that authority. It, you know how you said we're all human beings? It does humanize it, because in my view, respect isn't about hierarchy. It's about modeling the behavior you want to see. And if we expect children to be kind, accountable, and appreciative, we have to teach that. We have to demonstrate it first. And I completely agree. Gratitude and humility don't lower parents' role. They actually strengthen the relationship, because the child will feel, "I'm getting respect here, so I need to give it back." And we often, as we talked about earlier, we often parent from how we were parented, either copying it or reacting against it. So how aware do you think parents need to be of their own upbringing?
I think coming from the Asian community, for example, I think we really do need to wake up, for want of a better word, and really see how we were parented and what were the things that distressed us most as children. When I was a child, it was okay to be beaten, but was it okay? How did that make me feel if I was beaten for the slightest misdemeanor? I was brought up in Uganda. You were beaten at home if you were naughty, or if it was felt that you were disrespectful or you weren't toeing the line in some way. And then when you went to school, you were beaten if you weren't toeing the line about something. And if a teacher didn't like your work, or if they thought you were being naughty or disruptive, or if they felt you were being disrespectful. And then if you came home and said, "The teacher beat me," or the teacher rang up your parents and said, "I had to beat your child today," you got beaten more. That's not, and I think when I look back at that sort of upbringing, I'm ashamed to say that I actually thought that was okay to smack a child when my child was younger. I really have learned so much, because my child had the spirit to turn around and say, "Well, this is how it makes me feel." And I really had to bring myself short, and I had to really sit down and reflect about the emotional damage I was doing to my child. And do you know, when I let go of those practices, when I let go of the idea that it's okay sometimes to smack your child, it, you know, once I let go of that, I realized my child was actually a better person because she was not fearful anymore. She wasn't afraid anymore. And she was able, she and I were able to have conversations. So if there was something she did, I was able to sit down with her and say, well, actually, that's how that made me feel. And then she would say, okay, I understand. And that had more impact than a slap. Far more impact. And I still come across families in African families, Asian families, every culture, every race, they still that philosophy. Some parents carry that idea, you have to slap a child. It's, you know, it's there in some of the religious books, beat a child to make them conform, you know, and to make them respectful. But it's really not the way. And people may disagree or agree with me, but I feel that I have a much, much better connection and a much better relationship with my child since I've sat down and talked to her instead of just, you know, don't want to listen to you and you just get a slap for doing that wrong. You know, I don't want to have a relationship with my child based on fear. Absolutely not. That's not a relationship. You want a proper spiritual, emotional connection. You don't get that through slaps. You don't get that through bringing your child down or belittling your child in any way, or forcing your child to accept the pressure of being perfect, having perfect scores. You know, the saddest thing I ever heard was a parent say to a child, she said, oh, Dad, I got 97% in my exam today. And she was beaming. And he said, what happened about the other three? Yeah. And the child's face just fell. And I think, do you know, that is a parenting style that he's probably learned from his parents. And he's thinking, I'm encouraging my child to think about the other 3% and to get to perfection, to get to 100%. How many parents do that? Yeah. You know, so it's not just physical discipline. It's about how you interact with your child verbally, emotionally, spiritually. I think that is really crucial.
Yes, and thank you for speaking about that so openly. And that's not an easy thing to reflect on publicly, Bharti, about discipline and how you're being disciplined in your past, or how you've been disciplined in your past, and how you felt you had to discipline your child. So thank you for being so vulnerable. And really, what you've been describing is what we describe as transgenerational patterns, and it's what many communities were taught, that for them that was normal. But normal doesn't always mean healthy, and the real strength is exactly what you did, pausing, questioning it, and choosing a different way. And sadly, a lot of people still don't do that. And what stands out for me, because obviously you've got a child here, they are a child, they haven't got the life experiences as the adult, the parent carer. So that child won't even understand, or might not even understand or know what they did wrong, you know? And they're getting hit or disciplined or smacked or whatever it is as a consequence. And only because that's what worked for the parent, you know?
Yes.
And it doesn't erase the past, but it absolutely changes the future. So I appreciate you sharing that. You're absolutely right. Discipline isn't just a physical aspect. It's our tone, our words, our expectations, the emotional environment we create shapes far more than any exam result ever will. So thank you so much for all your valuable insight, Bharti, so far. Mm-hmm. We're going to take a short commercial break with a word from our sponsors. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Thank you. Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Belinda Walia, and today I'm joined in conversation with the amazing Bharti Dheer. Before the break, we were exploring how identity and upbringing shape parenting. Let's continue. Welcome back, Bharti.
Thank you, Belinda.
Bharti, what does healthy attachment look like in everyday family life?
I think there's so many different types of attachment, aren't there? There's the insecure attachment, where a child will be bereft if the parent's not there. There's so many different types. But for me, a healthy attachment is, I personally believe, is what I've got now. And it might sound very... It may sound very converse to say this, because a healthy attachment is being able to let your child be who they are and be non-judgmental and be accepting of the choices that your child wishes to make in their life, and being there just as somebody to advise them and guide them. My child is now currently at university, and actually, in a funny way, the reason why I was saying converse is because now she's far away, but we still have a very healthy attachment. She's able to call me and ask me for advice. She checks up on me more than I check up on her. She will call me and say, "Mum, you know, daily, how are you? What have you done today? Have you eaten?" And, you know, it's for me, it's healthy. The relationship is healthy because we can talk to each other, we can ring each other, we can see each other when she's back home at holidays. There is no more of, you know, I hope you're, you know, I've never done this actually. You know, I hope you're sleeping okay. I hope you're going to bed in time. Did you go to a nightclub? You know, I've got friends who've said to me, "Oh, we've put trackers on our children's phone because we want to check that they actually go into bed at a time that they said that they would. We want to check that they are working, they're at university when they say they are." And I just feel that's not a healthy attachment. That is, I just feel that attachment doesn't necessarily have to be your child tied to you and your apron string. Your child a healthy attachment is a child who is free to make choices and to do what they want to do and have their own sets of values, ones that you can, you both have a mutual respect for. Even if my child did something that I didn't approve of, I would guide her, but I would still have to have that in my head. This is her life journey, and she may make mistakes along the way, but she will learn from those mistakes. I can only guide her and advise her. And to me, that sums up for me what a healthy attachment is, not somebody who's imposing a will. I'm not imposing my will on my child.
Yes, I think that's a very thoughtful way to describe it. And I love how you've described it, actually. And a healthy attachment isn't about control or constant monitoring. It's about trust. And that's what we're talking about here, trust, isn't it? Knowing yes. your child can step out into the world and still feel emotionally anchored to you. And the fact that she calls you, checks in, asks for advice, that says everything. And to me, that's security, not fear of losing you or not being tracked, not being managed, but choosing connection. And when a child chooses to come back to you for guidance, that's when you know the attachment is strong. And that's where the emotional attachment grows. And so, very valuable point there. And, you know, there's often this, because like yourself, I work with children on occasion I work with families, and I've come across a lot of families that feel pressured with the balance of time, and they can't manage children's behavior because work demands and busy schedules. So how can parents create genuine connection without feeling guilty about time? See, it's, I know earlier you just said, I don't often call my daughter. It might be by choice of giving her freedom. But there's a lot of parents out there that feel, oh, I haven't got the time. I haven't got the, or the child might not connect with the parent if they are at university. So what would be your advice on that?
That's actually one of the most difficult questions I've ever been asked. And I'll tell you why. You know, I remember my child saying to me, Mum, you are always working. That's my recollection of you growing up. You're always working. And, you know, my study, I'm going to give you a personal example. So my study is right at the top in the attic, and it's got stairs leading up to it. And quite often in social work, you have lots of reports to write. And sometimes I'd be upstairs, I would come down, make the meal, we'd eat a meal together, and then I'd be straight back upstairs working. And my child, when she was about 9 or 10, she used to come up and she would sit on the top stair and she would be reading. And she said to me, do you know why I did that, Mum? I did that because I needed to be close to you, but you were so busy working, I didn't feel I could disturb you. So I used to just sit there, just to be in your presence. And as a working parent, and I'm sure many working parents would relate to this, I felt I've never got over that sense of guilt that I didn't give enough time to my child because of my work schedule. And I haven't got an easy answer for that, Belinda. I still sort of, I don't regret working because I needed to work. You know, I needed to work to pay the mortgage and to pay the bills and to put food on the table and to allow us to have that quality time on holidays together. But, you know, I don't think as a working parent you ever, ever get over that sense of guilt that you could have given more time to your child. You could have given more space for your child. And I don't have an easy answer to it, answer to that. I mean, I'm a single parent, so I chose to be a single parent. And I don't know if it's any different if you're a two-parent family. For me, I think the way I've explained it to my child is, you know, I've always been honest, and I've said to her, I have to do this work because of da 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 da. Like we go on a nice holiday together, you know, 3 times a year, and we spend that time together. We have weekends together. We have some part of the evening together. I would try and do my best to help her with her homework, and I took her to activities and things like that, just to try and create that connectedness. But I think a child who grows up with a working parent or parents, and they're constantly working, is always going to feel we could have given them more time. And I just have no easy answer to that.
I mean, that's incredibly honest, and thank you for keeping it real like that. And there's no perfect formula here. And most parents are constantly trying to balance, provide and being present. And it's really a easy process. So in my view, what makes the difference isn't the number of hours, it's the quality of the connection within those hours. And when you were explaining how you used to involve her, creating moments, being intentional, I think that's what people can take away from this conversation, that it's the quality. And the fact that you're still reflecting on it now tells me you care deeply. And for your child to approach you and say what she did with such sincerity and honesty and reflect on it, that's very mature of her as well. So I think you're right, there's no set answer. It's not an easy question to answer, and it varies on people's circumstances. Like you said, you're a single parent, of course, to a couple who may be bringing up the child or more, it could be a completely different picture. So thank you for that. And what are some of the common emotional needs in children that adults often overlook? Because it was nice that your daughter was able to approach you. It was nice that she was able to reflect on things and not be resentful for them, because you gave her that platform to talk. You created that bond. So, but a lot of people, they tend to overlook certain things. What do you think that might be?
I think the most important thing I've learned for me is to constantly tell my child I love her. And I think in a lot of cultures, people don't do, you know, particularly the culture I came from, it's not easy for a parent to say, I love you, you know. And I think it's really important for a child to hear that, to hear that they're loved. Parents often think, well, I'm providing. They know they're loved. I give them food. I give them nice clothes. I give them money, I give them all these material goods. Of course, I wouldn't do any of this if I didn't love them. So my child must know I love them. But no, children need that connectedness. They need to hear. Children will put up with lack of material goods. They will put up with a lack of this or a lack of that. But if they can hear their parents say, I love you, I'm doing my best for you, and I think you're a unique and special human being in my life, that carries more power than anything else you can give a child. You know, you can give your child the world, but that child may still feel empty if they feel it doesn't come from a place of love, because they've not heard you say, I love you. Be aware of your child, you know, connect with your child. Be in their space wholly, not half-heartedly. Make your child feel precious, that their time with you and they're wanting you to talk, to listen to them and to talk to, is just equally precious to you. Don't give them half an ear.
You've really highlighted is that love has to be spoken and shown. So Bharti, thank you again. We're going to take another short commercial break. Don't go anywhere.
UK Health Radio. the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movements and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. I'm Belinda Walia, and we're continuing this important conversation with the amazing Bharti there. Welcome back, Bharti.
Thank you.
You're welcome. How can parents encourage independence without creating emotional distance?
Well, from my own personal experience, I said a key thing to my child once when she was studying for her GCSEs and her A-levels. And I remember saying to her, I'm not going to nag you or ask you unless you want some guidance, but I'm not going to ask you whether you're studying anymore, because it used to really annoy her. And I said, okay, I'm going to trust you and I'm just going to leave you to your studies. I'm going to trust that you're going to do your studies. And if you do well, perfect, great, excellent. I'm not asking for A pluses, A's. I, as long as you've done your best, I know you've done your best. It is hard sometimes. They make decisions, they make choices in their lives, and you want to step in and rescue. But only rescue if they ask you. Don't rescue because you feel they need it. Because they need to learn to fly those wings. Baby birds will fall when they're falling. And the parents sometimes might scoop them up or they might let them fall. Because then that baby bird will learn, oh, this is the way I need to operate my wings to not fall again. Or this is where I can land so that I don't hurt myself. And that's the same with children. You have to let them fly their wings.
Yes. And of course, it comes back down to that trust and building that open communication and having those conversations. It doesn't happen automatically. Thank you. And finally, Bharti, if there's one grounding reminder you would give to parents listening who are navigating identity, balance, and responsibility, what would it be?
I think the final advice I would give to parents is ego and pride. Let go of ego and pride. We live in a community which we live in communities where we are so molded and so, you know, we're so molded by messages of what success should look like in our children. And a lot of the pressure about 11 pluses, getting A levels, getting into great universities, it's societal pressure. And I think it's also based on your ego and your pride to be able to say to parents, oh, my child made it. They've done this. I told them to be a doctor. They've become a doctor. I've told them to be going to law. They've gone into law. And, you know, a lot of parents will sit there and say, my child didn't make it because she didn't become this, or she didn't become that, or she didn't get this grade, or she didn't get that grade. That's all ego. That's all your own ego. That's all your own pride. You know, just celebrate your child, whether she achieves or she doesn't achieve. She's achieved in her own way other things. Look at what your child brings to the table. It's not necessarily academic achievement. It could be any other form of achievement. Celebrate your child as the authentic child that they're meant to be. And let go of that ego and pride that tells you you have to control your child's choices and you have to measure their success by what they became. You know, so that's the only message I would give. Let go.
And what a great message to end with, because success looks different for every young person.
Absolutely.
And when parents or carers celebrate effort, the character and individuality rather than status, that's when children truly feel valued and they create a sense of self-worth. So thank you for sharing that, Bharti. Bharti, thank you for such a thoughtful and reassuring conversation. Parenting is not about perfection. It's about awareness, reflection, and showing up again and again with intention. And today's discussion has reminded us that our children don't need flawless parents. They need present ones. So to everyone listening, thank you for joining us on the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. If this episode resonated with you, please do share it with someone who may benefit. And Bharti, if people want to connect with you, where can they reach you or find you?
Belinda, I'm on Facebook. I'm also on Instagram. So if they want to send me a message, I will really be happy to connect with them. I'm on under my name, Bharti Dear, and under Worth. Bharti Dear, Worth is the book that I've written.
That's brilliant, thank you. And to close today's show, I'm leaving you with a part of a song that captures strength, belonging, and staying true to who you are. This Is Me by Kiala Settle and the Greatest Showman cast, because identity, courage, and connection begin at home. Until next time, take care of your health, your heart, and each other.